In advance of the sharing that we're about to hear, that we are privileged to hear this morning from Marilyn Miller and Arlene Geisinger, hear these words that they have selected from John 10, beginning at verse 11. I am the good shepherd. The good shepherd lays down his life for the sheep. The hired hand is not the shepherd and does not own the sheep. So when he sees the wolf coming, he abandons the sheep and runs away. Then the wolf attacks the flock and scatters it. The man runs away because he is a hired hand and cares nothing for the sheep. I am the good shepherd. I know my sheep and my sheep know me. Just as the Father knows me and I know the Father, and I lay down my life for the sheep. I have other sheep that are not of the sheep pen. I must bring them also. They too will listen to my voice, and there shall be one flock and one shepherd. The reason my Father loves me is that I lay down my life, only to take it up again. No one takes it from me, but I lay it down of my own accord. I have authority to lay it down, and authority to take it up again. This command I received from my Father. And then from 1 John chapter 3, beginning in verse 16. This is how we know what love is. Jesus Christ laid down his life for us, and we ought to lay down our lives for our brothers and sisters. If anyone has material possessions and sees a brother or sister in need, but has no pity on them, how can the love of God be in that person? Dear children, let us not love with words or speech, but with actions and in truth. And this is how we know that we belong to the truth, and how we set our hearts at rest in his presence. If our hearts condemn us, we know that God is greater than our hearts, and he knows everything. Dear friends, if our hearts do not condemn us, we have confidence before God and receive from him everything we ask, because we keep his commands and do what pleases him. And this is his command, to believe in the name of his Son, Jesus Christ, and to love one another as he commanded us. The one who keeps God's commands lives in him, and he in them. And this is how we know that he lives in us. We know it by the Spirit he gave us. Now, Marilyn and Arlene, I invite you to come forward, whether you were to share from here or the pulpit up there. We look forward to what you are bringing to us today. May God bless your sharing.
On April 5, just 8 weeks ago, I received a kidney from my friend Arlene, and that experience is what we will be sharing with you today. From my grandfather and then my mother, I inherited a condition called polycystic kidney disease, which over time may cause the complete loss of kidney function. So 21 and a half years ago, I received my first transplant kidney from my one sister who does not have this condition. Ruth is 1.5 years younger than me, but over that long stretch of time, it became clear that I would need another kidney. Our story today will share the details of how this need was met. Joetta Slabaugh, pastor of Faith Mennonite Church in Minneapolis, suggested that Arlene and I tell about becoming a donor and receiving the gift of a kidney as part of a program centered on sharing a life with another. The scriptures for the Sunday morning worship service were Psalms 23, 1 John 3, 16 to 24, and John 10, 11 to 18, which we have heard earlier in the service.
What goes into the decision to become an organ donor, or at least my decision? The idea of giving a life-giving gift is definitely appealing and daunting. If I remember correctly, I first read the email from Ernie in August of last year that Marilyn had decided it was time to let people know that she was in need of a kidney. The thought crossed my mind that maybe I should be tested to see if I might be a possible donor. I've been lucky to be healthy all my life, and I also have a healthy, or shall we say, unhealthy fear of all things medical. I put off annual physical exams because I dread having blood drawn. I get lightheaded hearing other people talk about medical procedures. All in all, the idea of going through the tests and process of kidney donation was really scary. I had talked to Glenn briefly about being tested. He knew he didn't have the right blood type. I didn't know my blood type. Knowing that Marilyn's health was declining kept me thinking that for me, while there was fear to overcome, For her, a new kidney was a critical factor in her quality of life. I knew that several people, including her daughter and some of her friends, had been tested or were in the process of being tested. I kept thinking about doing this, but didn't move on to taking action.
One of the scripture readings that morning is the familiar Psalm 23 with the image of the shepherd leading me beside the still waters, restoring my soul and leading me in the right paths. It is a passage that many people find comforting when faced with a difficult and uncertain situation. For several years leading up to today, my nephrologist, Dr. Dahl, and I would have our annual conversation with the focus of anticipating what would be happening to my kidney function and the related decisions we would have to make. As the predictions became more and more real, he encouraged me to start the preliminary process of looking for a living donor. At this stage, denial is the biggest temptation, and so one procrastinates. But in September 2010, my kidney function numbers had dropped to the point that I could be placed on the national waiting list for kidney. So for the following year, I actually began to make my situation known. Family, friends, relatives, neighbors, former classmates, and business clients were made aware through telephone calls, emails, conversations, and Facebook. So when the first response came from a cousin of my husband, whom I met once, maybe twice at the most, saying she would be willing to be my donor, I totally fell apart, as we really didn't know each other, and I was so overwhelmed by her offer. When our daughter Renee was ruled out, she went on a one-woman campaign, and in a short time, five or six of her friends had asked for a kit and had sent in blood samples for testing. Blood types not matching or other issues ruled out all of these possibilities. But sometime in the spring of 2011, a dear mutual friend, Carol Shelley, stepped forward to be tested. Although she proved not to be a match, I will always believe that her decision had a positive influence on Arlene, my donor, who is also a friend of Carol's.
Finally, in November, I decided I would begin the process. From the beginning, I had known that if I started the process, I would see it through to the end, whatever that might be. The first blood test was done at my clinic. Something may have been lost or connection missed. For whatever reason, I didn't hear anything for weeks. I think I was thinking, maybe hoping, that this might mean I wasn't a match. But that didn't make any sense. I figured I should hear one way or the other. I put off calling the clinic to follow up. After Christmas, I got up the courage to make the call to the living donor clinic. I left a message, and within hours, I got a call back saying that I was the right blood type. We scheduled the next step for the following week. This was another blood test. It turned out to be 10 vials of blood to determine compatibility. I didn't pass out. Within a week, the positive results were back. I got a notebook of information in the mail about the program with all the procedures, risks, and benefits. The next step was a full day of tests, procedures, and interviews to determine if I was a good risk. The drive-in for that day of testing was traumatic. I came as close to a panic attack as I have ever come on my way into HCMC. It took lots of deep breaths to maintain control. As I knew I would, one of the first things I had to do that day was to sign a document stating that I knew the risks involved, including possibly death, and that I was doing this without pressure from anyone. Parenthetically, this was the first of three times I had to sign documents saying that I was aware of these risks. This didn't help me feel more confident, but we proceeded. As it turned out, I had to have more tests and procedures due to a family history of cancer. More needles and probing. I was pretty preoccupied and consumed with thinking about this for 3 months. I kept Marilyn informed of what was going on and what we were waiting for. Through all this time, she was remaining hopeful and encouraged. Whenever I talked about it with anyone else, I kept saying, "I'll just be happy when it's all done." There were lots of responses from people saying they were supportive and praying for both of us.
When I was placed on the national waiting list, I became responsible for where I was at all times, reachable by cell phone, and to make it a top priority to keep myself as healthy as I could and have a support group as backup when my husband was out of town. Any travel plans had to be cleared in advance Soon all plans were discouraged, and eventually any such plans were put on hold. The questions surrounding me were, would I find a donor? Would I make it till then? Or would I have to face the alternative, which was dialysis? And if I didn't find a donor, how would I do with the dialysis treatments? Days, weeks, and months passed while I tried not to worry. I was anxious at times, but my mantra, trust in the Lord with all your heart and lean not unto your own understanding. In all your ways, acknowledge him, and he will direct your paths, Psalms 3:5-6, sustained me. In the fall of 2011, when we returned from a trip to Virginia to celebrate Ernie's 50th high school reunion, we found Arlene's email message to me that she was going to begin the testing process to be my donor. I couldn't stop crying because I did not want my friend to have to go through this for me. It was just so hard for me to accept this offer, a gift of immeasurable value. We didn't know then that she would successfully pass all of the many tests and be approved to be my donor. But when that call came at the end of March, it almost surprised both of us, as the testing had gone on for several months. Surgery was scheduled for 2 weeks later, and as they say, the rest is history. My job now is to follow a very tightly scheduled regimen, which has included visits to the transplant clinic for blood draws 3 times a week for 8 weeks, as they closely monitor my progress while the drugs are being reduced to sustainable levels. I can't think of anything more important for me right now than taking care of myself, of Arlene's kidney, and following doctor's orders. Arlene's gift kidney has proven to be an excellent fit and has been functioning without flaw starting before I was out of surgery. Other issues that had become apparent pre-surgery have been reversed and medications for them are no longer needed. A gift of new life, truly.
No doubt, this is one of the biggest decisions I've made. Knowing that this was a life-giving process kept me going. It was a way of putting faith into action, of doing for another what I would want someone to do for me. There was the ever-present hope that the process would result in Marilyn regaining her health. Affirmation and support from family and friends was strong. Seeing the life-changing work that can be done by medical people is quite amazing to me. Kidney removal was done laparoscopically, quite amazing. The hospital procedures all appeared to be fairly routine. I only had to be in the hospital 2 days. I could have gone home the day after surgery, but I wasn't feeling quite up to it. Within hours of surgery, I was walking the halls of the hospital, and the day after I came home, I was walking around the gardens and the neighborhood. Marilyn looked really good and healthier within a day of the surgery. The Easter season was particularly meaningful for me this year with all of these things happening. Among the cards and responses I received, people noted the courage and generosity involved in making this decision. Particularly poignant were notes from Marilyn's granddaughters thanking me for saving their grandma's life. I have to say that these things were not what was going through my mind. Throughout the process, the thought of this being a life-giving decision was too big of an idea to embrace. I was thinking about Marilyn getting better and being able to live a more normal life. I'm thankful that ordinary miracles like this can happen every day.
Technology improvements in communication played a much greater role in this transplant than in my first one 21 and a half years ago. We were able to communicate widely and instantly concerning finding a donor, setting dates for the procedures, and follow-up after surgery with the great news of the success of the transplant. And we were flooded from all over with joy and happiness for us. The frequent sentiment of joy, of answered prayer, made me believe that many of our friends had their faith renewed and built up because of sharing in our experience. So many bonds of friendship have been strengthened and become more precious. All of that loving support and your prayers went with us down that hallway early on April 5. The Easter season of 2012 will forever hold a special significance for our families. Easter Day was the perfect day to celebrate new life and answered prayers. And so I truly echo the sentiment expressed on the cards Arlene received from our granddaughters. Thank you so much, Arlene, for giving our grandma back her life and her health.